Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
It's Wednesday on USA Football's Coaching Coordinator Podcast, which means it is another day for our Trends Day series as we track through the season and look at the different trends happening in the NFL, college football, and even high school football. And joining me on the podcast is Charlie Quinn, our First Down Playbook and former NFL coach. Charlie, great to have you here again.
Hey, Keith. Great to be here.
And sitting to my right is Zach Dunn, who is our content coordinator and analyst here at USA Football.
Yeah, Keith, can't wait.
All right, guys. So big game this past weekend. Looking at LSU and Alabama, we saw some of the things that we've been trending on throughout this season. One thing I saw was really interesting, and Zach and I talked about this on our podcast the other day when we were talking about analyzing tempo, was the idea of really understanding how to use the various tempos and what your opponent is doing in response to it. So if you look at the one play, I think it was in the second quarter, you know, Alabama has been looking to the sideline and checking plays. And in this particular one, Tua steps up, looks to the right, and real quickly after the defense takes a peek over to Dave Aranda on the sideline, he claps his hands and the receiver is by the corner right now. That corner was looking towards the sideline, was pressed up tight, and they beat him. And obviously they schemed up tempo in this particular instance. That guy got leverage and over the top of him quick because they knew he was going to peek to the sideline, not have his eyes on him, and be uptight. And they had the opportunity there and took advantage of it for a big play.
Yeah, Keith, I don't know that I've ever seen that before, to be honest, because it didn't take much for that cat to, you know, on his release. Once he was by, I don't care who you are, in NFL or wherever, you weren't going to catch him. But that was an interesting – I don't know that I've ever seen anybody use tempo, and I'm sure it's happened, I just haven't noticed it, use tempo and really get the coaches on it is what they did. That was fantastic.
Yeah, you know, it's something as you see that, you know, and you think about the details of this game and that people are watching everything now looking for those advantages that in that situation now, and I'm thinking, okay, if I was a team that was pressing up like that and they look to the sideline and we were going to look to the sideline and adjust, the first thing procedurally, which I would need out of my corner, would be get off the ball. Be in a place where if they were to try to catch us like that, and I'm saying this now after seeing it happen, so this wasn't like a thought I had before, but that's how I would have to coach against anybody using that look tempo. Because for me, on the offensive side of the ball, the advantage in that kind of tempo is that we're checking against what the defense is doing. Now, you know, the defense is pretty quickly caught on to what the offense was doing in that look type of tempo, and now they're looking over and checking and trying to have the chalk last, and in this particular case, they got it used against them.
Yeah, Keith, Dave Aranda studied under Ron Roberts, and Ron Roberts, about a decade ago when Dave Aranda was there, he gave a clinic on tempo and such, and how you need to game plan and how you need to study tempo and how you need to defend it. And he classified four types of tempo as regular, hurry, scan, and auto. And scan is what Alabama does. It's a lot of get to the line, get lined up, you know, trips, two by two, whatever it may be. Look at the defense, then the quarterback looks back to the sideline to get the actual play from the offensive coordinator. Well, Aranda is a big believer on that. Like he said, that is an opportunity for the defense to get the chalk last. Show two high, show one high. You know, if you show two high and you're five or six in the box, you know they're probably going to check to run. So, you know, when they check, you check to one high, then you get the extra man in the box, then you have the chalk last. So I believe that's what Dave Aranda was trying to do, and I know that Bama knows that. And so I'm sure that's something that they had game planned. Hey, we know that they're going to look to the sidelines when we look to the sidelines. So at some point, let's give them a fake tempo. You know, let's act like we're going to look back to the sidelines, snap the ball, and catch them off guard. And what that probably did was, for the rest of the game, like he said, LSU's probably telling the corners and stuff, hey, if they're checking and we're checking, corners got to back off five, six yards at least. And what that does, though, for the offense is if they know that the corners are going to back off every time they check, then that's going to open up more things like slants and hitches, because the corners are probably going to play more off coverage because the defense is going to be checking their plays a lot more.
I know when I first started using that kind of tempo as a coordinator, I fully expected the defense to start doing it. It wasn't really it was a year and a half, I think, till somebody finally did it against us where they were checking over to their side as well. And, you know, we have been working on another procedure. To me, tempos are really procedures. It's, you know, all the things that you do within it either lets you go very fast or slow things down. So in that particular procedure, you know, we really just started putting all those checks that we might look for as a coach out on the field with the quarterback. I mean, just like, you know, Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Drew Brees or any of those guys have been around a long time and know how to manipulate a defense. Number one, I think if you could teach a kid to do that, he's in a better position than you are up in the press box or on the sideline to be able to see a few things. And the other thing is when the quarterback's handling those checks, the opponent is not looking to the sideline. They can't look to the sideline to their coaches to get all the answers for what they need to check to. So you're able to eliminate that a little bit. You know, another thing we saw in that game, which you talked about earlier in the season, was kind of that wheel throwback out of the backfield, and a real nice job, again, game planning by Alabama when they're able to get the safeties to move, you know, basically rock when they see that jet motion. And so they ran the back out of the backfield and up the sideline. It was one of those things that the safety moved just enough. You had that kind of a half roll that looked like it was going to be some kind of a boot or waggle pass towards the jet side, and the quarterback stopped, Tua stops and throws back the other way. And they did a really nice job of formationing, motioning, and really protecting so that they do get that one-on-one and time to throw the football for Tua, who was a little hobbled up.
No doubt. They couldn't risk, you know, something silly happening on that. But at the same time, Tua, just his mechanics, and we talk about this here, you know, Keith, you have quite a few times about screens and things like that. That guy just has the ability to throw, not across his body, but back away from the way he's moving. About as good as I've ever seen, I think. And that's what they did there. We was moving to his right, but they gave him time to, you know, get his feet planted and throw back over to, you know, one of the best athletes in the country. But well, you know, well diagrammed out. Just two heavyweights at that point in time in the game. I mean, just back and forth. And I mean, every time you thought that either Alabama was going to come back and be Alabama and just win the game, or if you thought LSU was going to run away with it, the other side was like, no, this is why we are who we are. And that was a big play at that point in time.
You know, the other thing, we've talked quite a bit about some of the different pressures. I think last week we talked about a three-man pressure, a little bit of a twist that we saw. I believe it was against the Browns, you know, Fangio getting home with three guys. We haven't necessarily talked about line stunts a lot. I have seen a lot of line stunts this past season as I watched some high school football. And, you know, what I really was noticing, though, was that most of those weren't getting home, and sometimes those were getting gashed. And as we, you know, were going through our All 22 Tuesday film and we were looking at Baylor and what they were doing, we saw some things that you don't see in the diagram, right? Some very well thought out technique and even tactics there as these guys executed their stunt and were sure that at least one of those guys was going to get home with a particular twist. So while I think twists of all various types and loops have really become popular, especially as we start to see things like what are teams who are playing that tight front going to do to get pressure from the outside, and, you know, some of the creative things there, that it's not just about the movement, it's about the technique that goes along with it as well.
That's right, Keith. And we saw, I think, both of those pressures. We saw one from the Falcons against the Saints, and we saw one with Baylor against TCU. And I think they both came in third down situations too, which, you know, a lot of times you need to do that, stop the quarterback from running. And it's not quite the threat of a read, you know, zone read or something like that, or getting gashed as you're talking about. But the things that I saw took me back to my NFL days coaching special teams, because I've coached a little bit of everything and been on the defensive line, and also, you know, just trying to get a punt block. And so when one of the things that I learned a lot about, you know, while coaching the defensive line and work on punt return or punt block, is that your penetrator, a lot of times, I see this in high school a lot, your penetrator, they'll penetrate, but then kind of give themselves up and you know, think that the looper is going to be the one that is going to get the sack. Thinking that you really, what you're doing is you're going to trick them. You're going to get two guys on the penetrator and nobody's going to come off. Well, at that level of football, when you have a penetrator and he comes down into a gap and two guys come down on him, well, when that looper comes around, the offensive lineman is not blind. He's going to come off of that. And when that happens, that's why it's incredibly important for a penetrator to stay in that gap. Keep pressing, keep pressing, keep pressing. Because the idea is, if the offensive lineman comes off with a looper, the penetrator is going to come free. And if the double team stays on the penetrator, then yeah, the looper will come free. Well, we saw that at an incredible level with the Falcons when they got the one on the Saints, because, you know, these guys are obviously the best in the world. The penetrator came down and the Falcons had it schemed up. And we used to do this too with our punt blocks. You needed to know which way the center was going to protect, to the left or the right. If you go back and you watch this, the Falcons knew that the center was going to work to their left, and that gave them a chance to set it up to where the guard was going to come down and help the center, and the penetrator just essentially almost knocked the Saints guard down, and he came free and sacked Drew Brees. But just like you're saying, I mean, and then Baylor did some good things too, just really of not giving away your lanes to the last second. You know, you see a lot of people start to twist way too soon, and you know, you've got your offensive linemen got all kinds of time to communicate and get depth and get it off. But if you can keep that, if you can keep the twist hidden as long as you can, that's going to give you a chance to have better success.
You know, it's funny how things kind of work as you look at, you know, different conferences and teams starting to do similar things. You know, somebody sees it on film, it works on film against an opponent, and so you'll see something catch on with a conference. It's the same in high school football. I felt like the conference that my son's team was in, pretty much very similar, except for maybe one or two teams doing something a little bit different. So it was like week in and week out seeing a lot of those same things. I know in the Big 12, and Zach brought this up on All 22 Tuesday, we saw Baylor in, you know, something I learned as radar defense, but it's had a lot of different names, UFO, Amoeba. But those guys standing up and kind of moving around a little bit and, you know, potentially trying to screw up the calls of the offensive line and in their assignments and, you know, who they're going to get in the slide. So I know you and I talked, Charlie, this has been around for a long time. I told you my first exposure to this was in the 80s when my dad was coaching high school ball, and they were running that type of defense, and they called it radar. And that's something you had originally heard too. You know a little bit of the history behind it.
Well, I think I do. You know, it's a little bit like, you know, coaches, depending on what part of the country you're from. But yeah, I started coaching at Appalachian State when I got my start in the South. And, you know, we would usually have South Carolina or Clemson on our schedule every year. Coach named Joe Lee Dunn, defense coordinator, is where I first saw it, and Joe Morrison was the head coach. So, yeah, it's football keeps cycling. I go back. I thought Zach made a good point last week or the week before when he was talking about that very conference, the Big 12, and how, you know, the Kansas States of the world, and some people are starting to put a fullback in there, kind of change that way. So, yeah, you got a lot of moving parts in that conference right now. And, you know, they're you know, I know Oklahoma's Oklahoma, but it's starting to look like there's more balance in that conference. And you go week in and week out, you got radar defenses being played and the power being run by Kansas State. You got Texas kind of being a power football team and Oklahoma being Oklahoma. It's going to be a really interesting conference to see where it goes, as Zach pointed out a couple weeks ago.
The other thing we've been talking about lately, Charlie, is special teams. And, you know, when you get to this time of the year, when the games are going to get a little bit tighter, when you're in the playoffs, when the weather starts to have an effect on the game sometimes, you really got to be good at special teams. And, you know, we saw that this past week. I think we mentioned a couple weeks ago teams not being great at special teams and it cost them. And, you know, this particular week doing some things and making some plays in special teams that made a difference in a game.
No doubt, and we say this every week. You know, we can't watch every football game. I'm going to bring up three football games right here, and y'all will go like, if you're out there listening, you'll be like, yeah, there are six others. The biggest one, I don't know, maybe not the biggest one, but the one that stood out to everybody on TV the most, I'm sure. I mean, you got a punter that just drops the ball in the Alabama game, right? I don't know how you coach that up, but you got a then you got Alabama comes back for a kickoff return for six, I think it was. Then you got a missed extra point by LSU. So, I mean, you talk about a slugfest with two of the probably four best teams in our country right now back and forth. And there you have special teams, things like that happening. You look at the Kansas City Chiefs, one of my mentors, Dave Tope, in my opinion, if not a better special teams coach on the planet. Well, I mean, they have one at the end. I think they missed one, had a couple other things happen, special teams. But at the end of the game, essentially, Tennessee blocks the field goal to save the game from going to overtime. And what actually happens, if you look at it, is that they've got the center, the snapper, and the cadence down. And everybody's talking about that guy on the outside being offside. I don't believe he was offside. I believe that at the NFL, a little thing like that, like, you know, you've got guys out there that coach themselves. They're pros. And then that guy's been out there all day. He's looking at the cadence, looking at the snap count. He had it, and he pretty much blocked it with his waist. And then, the Baylor and the TCU game. I mean, you're sitting there at one point. I think the score might have been 12-6, 12-9, all field goals, and there were some missed in there. And a fake punt. I think it was Baylor faked the punt from their own 20-yard line because TCU was essentially in a defense that was – you know, they had enough bodies in there, but there's no way they thought that Baylor would do that. And so that time of year, guys, and everybody's in the playoffs at this point, even in Texas, I think they're about to get that far. You're going to have players that are banged up. You're going to have weather even at practice. But the things that you can do, in my opinion, is to make sure that even if it's not contact or even if it's not full speed, cover your special team stuff over and over and over again, because it's just going to break your heart if you end up losing the game just over that.
Definitely. And, you know, we've emphasized that week in and week out. And, you know, the last trend we're going to talk about today, we've mentioned this on the podcast several times, and I've saw it. You know, I've just been watching and observing and seeing, like, okay, these guys are using a middle eight strategy and looking at, you know, those last 4 minutes of the half, first 4 minutes of the next half, you know, starting with most of those teams who want to utilize that kind of strategy, you know, they're deferring. They want the ball in the second half. So it seems like more and more people are starting to think about that in terms of their clock management and trying to, you know, again, accomplish a few different things. You do it right, real time, you keep that quarterback off the field for about an hour. Right? An hour between snaps. That's a long time. You almost got to warm up again. So you get him out of a rhythm. But it's also the opportunity, really, to get up two scores on the other team, or if you need to, get back two scores. But to get two scores on the board there before they have a chance to get the football again. And Zach, you saw that this weekend as well.
Yeah, Keith. So it all started when LSU won the toss. LSU deferred to the second half. Well, on Alabama's first drive, they went right down the field, but Tua turns the ball over, jogging into the end zone. It looks like for some reason he just dropped the ball. Well, that is one thing that ended up hurting Bama in that game, but another thing is LSU get the ball back with around 3.5 minutes to go in the first half, and they went down the field and scored and left about 40 seconds on the clock. Well, Alabama, they could have kneeled it out. or they could have attacked like they did. And what happened was they tried to attack, you know, maybe get three more points before the half ends. Well, what happens is Tua throws a pick on the very first play, and it gets returned down to the, what, 7 or 8 yard line. Well, LSU puts another touchdown on the board. So that's 14 points in the last 3 minutes and 30 seconds of the first half. Well, then LSU receives to start the second half. Luckily for Alabama, they made adjustments and forced LSU into a punt. But that could have been devastating. That could have been 21 straight points that they allowed. But they got a stop. But also, to me, that's part of the middle eight, is that if you're Bama there, though, you have to be thinking, okay, we know that they're going to get the ball to start the second half. So the last thing we can afford here is a turnover and allow them to put one more score on the board, which you trust your Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback, but also stuff happens. And, you know, he threw a pick on the very first play on his own 25-yard line. They got returned down to the 10. And that's part of the reason why Bama lost the game, because what we've talked about, turnovers, special team blunders, and losing parts of the game like the middle eight. I mean, at one point the game was 16-9, then you look up at halftime and it's 33-16 LSU, and they're getting the ball to start the second half. I mean, that's just impossible to dig yourself out of a hole like that.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, if that's something, you know, again, you could wrap your mind around and look at how you might be able to do that. What can you do, you know, again, as you get into the playoffs, to be able to get that advantage, right, to be able to use the middle eight and think about a strategy there to chew up those last 4 minutes and then come out the door with the ball and go on a long drive again and, you know, really put your opponent behind. So I love that idea. We'll continue to look at some of those things, procedural things, time management things here as we wrap up this season. Charlie, you guys are doing some great things at First Down Playbook. How can our listeners see what you got going over there?
Yeah, Keith, if you're interested in looking at what we're doing at First Down Playbook, you just go to firstdownplaybook.com. And we right now we've got a free trial. If you want to go in there and take a look at it for absolutely nothing, you can do that. And then if you want to just keep up with daily blog that we do, you go to blog.firstdownplaybook.com, and that's on our coaches community site.
We got a lot of things going up on our blogs here as we wind down the season. I know we're kind of putting a focus on postseason analysis. You'll hear that on the podcast. You'll see some blogs there as well. We will be releasing our Game Plan Your Next Job. Some information on that. We'll have a podcast series again. So I did a poll the other day, and it looked like 20% of those young coaches who haven't been a head coach before are looking for their first head coaching job this season, and you know, potentially some other changes as well. It always starts to happen at this time of the year. Check that out at blogs.usafootball.com. Also, check out everything we're doing at footballdevelopment.com. Systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling. And I know you're saying, well, you know, the season's over. That's not useful to me now. The best part about those systems is that they're actually designed to be installed and implemented in the off season in your strength and conditioning program. So go over there, register with your email, get 3 free videos to check it out. You can also access our free shoulder tackle system, also known as the Hawk Tackle, that we put together with the Seattle Seahawks. Again, that's footballdevelopment.com. Charlie and Zach, it was great to talk ball with you guys again, and we'll do this again next week.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.